to sleep. What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, because I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some art.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz. Tonight we've got a wide variety of guests joining us from around the country to chat all things dance, music, theatre and events. Now music-wise this week we're taking a break from our Kiwi music because we need to honour the fabulous Tina Turner. We're going to celebrate her music all night on the show. And to kick it off, of course, it has to be the best.
I call you, I need you, my heart's on fire. You come to me, why?
Simply the best, all right. Wasn't that sad news this week, Emma?
It was, but, I mean, she's lived an amazing life and She was 83, right?
Yeah. Interesting that, you know, no one had really seen her for the last, you know, 10 years or so as she moved over to Switzerland, had to give up her American residency in order to live in Switzerland.
I found that fascinating. Yeah, I know. When I was searching for her image before, because if you jump over to Kickart's Instagram right now, you can tell us which song from Tina Turner you would like to hear tonight, and we'll be playing them throughout the night. But back to when I was searching for her image, and it said Swiss citizen, and I thought, really? Tina Turner was Swiss?
Interesting, eh? Unfortunately, Tina Turner didn't release Let It Go number, so we won't be able to play that this week. So you'll just need to get in quick and jump onto our social media and tell us what songs you would like to hear. Welcome back into the studio, Hamish, our intern. We didn't scare you off last week. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Stephen.
Great to have you here, and you're pushing the dials tonight, so if anything goes wrong, we're all blaming Hamish. No pressure. No pressure at all. Great to have you here. And joining us from the Pacific Dance Festival, a big welcome to Hayley and Lomina. Great to have you here, team.
Hello.
Thank you.
Welcome, welcome. We're going to catch up with you in a little while, but lovely to have your smiling faces here on a Sunday night. And Emma, before we do jump onto our first guest, last week we had in the team from Alone at Edinburgh Fringe Festival, that fabulous team that were trying to get themselves over there, and we asked you and asked you and asked you to jump on their Boosted all night. They have gone from, I think it was 14% last week, to 95%. They only have 20 hours left. They've raised 19,190 of their 20,000. Fantastic. Thank you to any Kickarts listeners who have jumped on and supported them. It would be so cool if we can see this get over to the 20,000 mark. The thing with Boosted is you need to get the whole lot of funds raised before it gets paid out. So 20 hours left. Jump on to Boosted. They're up on the homepage. Let's see that tick over tonight. Now, our first guest tonight is joining us on the phone, and this is the very fabulous Mikey Videotape, here to chat to us about everything he's up to, including some tunes in June. Welcome to the show, Mikey.
Hey, everybody.
How's, nice to hear from you. How's life? We haven't caught up with you for a while.
Yeah, well, a lot's been going on behind the scenes over that time since I last saw you guys. Obviously, that was with Outside In, after we'd just released our debut album, Karma Train. So that was about, what, 2 years ago now, I think, when I last caught up with you guys.
Yeah, in fact, we were on Zoom, weren't we, Mikey?
No, I think I came into the studio when we dropped the album.
Wow, that was a while ago.
It must have been a while ago, considering how long we weren't in the studio. Maybe it was just because we played lots of your music during our Zoom episodes and different things.
Yeah, true, that's right, I remember that.
So, what have you been up to? What's happening in the world of Mikey Videotape?
Well, I'm still working away with the band Outside In, but it's a really, it's a busy band, and it takes us a long time. We're all busy with other projects, and it takes us a long time to agree on compositions and things. And I have been having quite a lot of creativity bubbling away and not being able to really express it to the full extent in that environment. So I thought, hey, I love the band, want to keep going, love working with these guys, but I'm going to start doing some stuff on my own on the side just to keep challenging myself, really. And just being away from the team environment just resulted in me having somewhat of a big creative outpouring, and I just wrote a whole lot of new material, and it wasn't stuff that I would traditionally write, and it's not stuff that really fit with the band, so I just rolled into Mikey Videotape, and that was where that came from, really.
Brilliant. Now, with a name like Mikey Videotape, are we taking us back to music of the 80s?
Well, there's definitely an 80s influence in my first single, for sure, and people have been picking up on that. I mean, I guess 80s is quite a in-vogue retro sort of flavour at the moment, and it's around up a lot in the media and, with movies like Stranger Things and stuff like that. That aesthetic has been coming through a lot in the pop culture lately, so I guess I definitely sort of leaned into that a little bit. For this first single, it's definitely got some crazy 80s-sounding synthesizers and video game sort of synths and things in there.
And all your marketing materials very that kind of pop icon 80s vibe as well.
I guess it's just how it's starting to go. And I mean, with a name like Videotape, obviously I'm going to be looking for TV static sort of feel and going for that 80s, 90s kind of cut and paste feel for sure. Yeah, no, it's been fun discovering how I want to market it and how I want it to look and everything, and just not having a committee or anything, just being completely independent from record labels and from bandmates. It's been quite liberating, but also challenging, you know, not having anyone to bounce things off.
Yeah. Now, there's a chance for people to see you live coming up at the Pump House Theatre on the 8th of June as part of their Tunes in June. Tell us about that event.
So, I've done a few shows with Peter, who organises that event. We did some Radiohead songs with an orchestra not so long ago and became quite good friends. So he obviously is organising these shows, saw that I was releasing a single and flipped me a message and said, would you like to do a solo show at the Pump House? And I thought, wow, that's amazing timing. You know, I hadn't actually planned to do a release gig for the single because I hadn't really thought as far as how does Mikey Videotape perform live, because all the tracks are electronic and there's no, you know, like I can play them on piano or acoustic guitar, but that's not how they're sort of written to sound. So I hadn't thought that far ahead. Peter offered me the show, and I said yes because it was really fortuitous timing with promoting a single. And then I thought, shit, I now have to panic and put together a band or figure out how the live presentation of this project is actually going to work. So it's quite exciting, but it's put a firecracker under me as far as figuring out what we're going to do. So I actually ended up talking to my band, and I have you guys from Outside In backing me up at this show, playing my solo stuff, which will be fun.
That's awesome. Awesome. So, and there's lots of things happening in this lineup. Mikey Videotape, of course, kicks it off on Thursday, the 8th of June. On Friday, there's a Taylor Swift tribute, which is an acoustic instrumental concert. Includes a string quartet, piano, and lots of fairy lights, it says. Song and dance on the Saturday, and hits of the crooners, and an evening of beautiful music wraps it up on the Sunday night. So you can find out more by heading to pumphouse.co.nz for all the details. Now, Mikey, for people listening that haven't heard your journey, when did all this start for you? Take us back. When was music first in your life?
Well, I mean, I started learning piano when I was just turned 5, I think. And I learned piano sporadically from then until I was about 14 or 15. So I was already, you know, quite into that. And then once I hit teenage sort of times, I wanted to play in the bands with all the kids that were in bands at school, but piano wasn't really cutting it, so I wanted to teach myself guitar, and so I just went from there, taught myself guitar, and then once I hit my 20s, I was taking singing a lot more seriously, and certainly in the past 15, 20 years, that's been my main instrument. So I can play guitar and piano enough to write songs, but I'm not some sort of virtuoso on those instruments at all. I've really put all of my learning and focus into expanding my vocal abilities over the last few years and really knuckled down with, yeah, just developing that. It's been fun. So, yeah, I've been doing it for a long time now. I just had my 40th birthday and released the single on my 40th birthday as a sort of treat to myself and a bit of a celebration of this new freedom that I've discovered working on my own.
So tell us a little bit about the single, The Strangest Dream.
Okay, so a really long time ago, I studied a lot of lucid dreaming and started learning how to become aware in dreams and started writing down on my dreams as part of that practice. And I had one particular dream that was reoccurring, and it had lots of number three symbolism in the dream. There were like three puddles on the concrete, and then inside the puddle there were three goldfish that they couldn't swim because it was too shallow, and there were three trees on the horizon with three cats stuck in each one, things like that. There was all these sort of weird three reoccurring things, and so I sort of wrote a song.
Had you been doing something the night before, Mikey? Had you been taking something or drinking something?
No,
come on.
At least three things.
At least three things?
Yeah, three things. So I think maybe
I never remember my dreams.
Maybe one of your bandmates or your brother had spiked your drink.
Pop brownies or something like that. But I was having some pretty out there dreams, and they had certain themes to them, and so, yeah, I just wrote a song as part of trying to figure out what it was all about.
Brilliant.
And that was the song. And then, so actually when I wrote the song, it was very sort of bossa nova feel, just on guitar, like a real ding-ding-ding-ding-ding kind of feel. And I just didn't have a home for it. It wasn't really my style, but I liked the song. And then in the last year, I've met a producer that I work with for the single in Brooklyn. And he was like, let's take it in this direction. And so we just went on a bender playing with, you know, crazy 80s synths and video game sounds and things. And he sort of pitched that to me, which was cool.
I love that you say that you you went on a bender with him, because that was, you know, why you had a dream about three things, right?
Yeah, exactly. I've got to watch the way that I'm saying these things. But I think, I mean, going on a bender as far as, like, digging through synthesizers and sounds and coming up with some crazy things.
Brilliant. Well, look, we're going to play it now for you, so we wish you every success with it and with the tunes in June. Remember, you can catch Mikey Videotape and the song live on Thursday the 8th of June at the Pump House. Head to pumphouse.co.nz. Thank you for checking in with Kick Arts again.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It's been really nice chatting with you guys.
Really appreciate it, and we'll play out now The Strangest Dream.
I don't feel quite like myself today.
certainly the strangest dream, Emma, and people should check out the video clip on YouTube. Go and take a look.
I could share it.
You could. You could definitely share it.
That video was actually directed by Mikey's brother, Ashton. And, of course, we talked about Ashton a few weeks ago because Ashton was the director of Mass Productions Play.
Ah, fantastic.
See, little small worlds, you know, where we all are in...
Yeah, yeah.
6 degrees of separation? Absolutely. 6 degrees?
How many degrees? 3. It should be 3 degrees with them. Yeah, yeah. All right. So now we're delighted to welcome Hayley and Lamina from Pacific Dance New Zealand Festival, which is taking place from the 1st to the 16th of June. So thanks for listening to some music with us for the first part of the show. Now, Hayley, we'll kick off with you. Tell us, what's your link or involvement with this special festival?
So I have been asked to choreograph for the Moana Showcase, which is happening on the 6th of June. Please come, and there's a whole bunch of artists been carefully curated to come and showcase who they are, their artistic practice. Even though we are connected via the Moana, we are all diverse. So we all come with our own practice, different backgrounds, different loves and different ways we express who we are.
Beautiful. Oh, what that was. Wasn't that a brilliant, like, marketing pitch? I feel like you've done that before. No?
No. Radio once.
Is this your first involvement with Pacific Dance Festival, or is this an annual thing for you?
This is my first, so I'm very excited to offer something new to the festival, maybe, and also explore different sides to my own personal arts practice.
Nice. What do you hope the audience will take from it?
From my piece or the whole thing?
From your piece.
From my piece. Oh.
No pressure.
No pressure, yeah. I did not think of this. Possibly fantasy.
No.
How fantasy can be embedded through our everyday life.
Cool. Okay. Awesome. I'm going to come back and unpack that further. Lomina, tell us a little bit about your involvement in the festival.
I'm also choreographing a piece as well, and my piece is a little bit different. So this would be my third kind of show I'm sharing on the Moana platform. And I've got three dancers, so this would be the first time I'm actually choreographing a piece. I'm usually the dancer. I'm usually the one being choreographed on. So I thought this time around, I'm going to switch the roles and come as a choreographer. And it's something that I've always wanted to share with everybody. And my piece is... It's quite long in terms of, like, the time when we think of it, because I've seen the schedule. There's, like, a lot of five-minute shows, and mine is about, like, 10 to 15 minutes, because there's a lot of chanting embedded in it, and I've also got my own songs that I'm going to be singing, so I've also got my own vocals in it as well, yeah, and I've also got my own drums. I've got my family who's going to be drumming in my piece as well, all recorded live. Almost like when you go back to... Because I was born and raised in the islands. So back when I was growing up, it was like... we call it a string band. So, like, there'll be the uke, the ukulele, there'll be the guitar, the umba, the pa'u and the pa'umongo, and everybody would just gather around and start singing a song. So it's going to be that kind of vibe. But in terms of the movement, it'll be a little bit different in terms of the movements. So my piece is Cook Island piece. Everybody would see Cook Island dances, you see drums, beautiful dances, and it is that context, but I'm going to change perspectives in terms of how do you look at Cook Island dance.
Nice. Which part of the Cook Islands did you grow up in?
The mainland, the Rarotonga.
Right.
My grandparents are from the islands of Atu, Mauke, and Te Aro. I was born and raised on the mainland, Rarotonga. My mom is from the eastern side of the island, and my dad is from the southern side of the island.
We'll have to catch up off here. So I spent my childhood growing up in Mauke for many, many times because my brother was the teacher on the island. So regular trips there, and of course he married over there, and many, many children. So I'm an uncle to half of Mauke. It's a very special place.
Yeah, my mum's father taught in Moke. He was a teacher in Moke. Oh, wow. So, wow,
okay,
that's amazing.
Okay, we'll talk off here at the end. There's, isn't it? 2 degrees, was it 3 degrees of separation?
Yeah, definitely.
Including the Cook Islands. Both of you, tell us, I'm curious, where do you see sort of Pacific dance currently in New Zealand and in its space? I mean, we've all had those horrible COVID years where so many things disappeared. It feels alive and fresh at the moment.
Absolutely. I'm quite excited for it as well because I feel like there's space for evolution in it and different ways to practice. So fusion, I think, is a big thing and different ways to explore that. But also there's a whole digital aspect now. There's a film screening as well as part of Pacific Dance Festival. So excitingly, one of my short dance films is going to be showcased there as well. So I think the past years there's definitely like a pre and during and post kind of COVID arts practice. I feel like it's changed the way we think about dance and how we can showcase and express who we are through movement, and the digital aspect just opens up a whole another world. So people on the other side of the globe can see us now. We can be represented a lot more easily and it's more accessible.
Mm. For me, I see Pacific dance similar to Haley, bringing the old. How can we make... I've always had this question in terms of where the arts is growing to now. How can we bring the old into the new and how do we integrate it together? How do we make the old relevant in the new instead of always thinking just the future? Mm. Without the old, we wouldn't be where we are at now. So for me, it's that question of how do we integrate the old with the new and how do we make it work together? Because the reason why I think this way is my dad, I always go back to inspiration to my father. He was so good at integrating religion with tradition. He was so good at it. And he was well respected in the Cook Island community for integrating tradition and religion when there's a lot of separation when it comes to religion, a lot of separation when it comes to tradition. But what is tradition, you know? So for me, I'm hopeful that we remain grounded in the old so that we can move forward with the new in terms of the digital. Because like Haley, we've also got a dance film coming out, also being presented as well, called the Afiloa, and how that Afiloa was bringing the old stories and bringing it alive in the new. It's exciting as well, like having artists like the two of us coming through with this kind of mindset is just, exciting.
That's so cool. So when did dance all begin for you both, Hayley?
Oh, wow.
When did take us back on your journey?
Dance. Probably from the day you could walk.
No, I wish. I was a painfully shy child. So I wanted to dance. I saw Britney Spears and I just fell in love with all of it. Yeah, I was like, that is me, this theatrical production, the glitter, all of that I loved. And so I didn't really get into it until about high school. There was a program called Bring It On, which was a high school dance program, which quite a few people I know have gone through now. And since that, I fell in love, did some, because my practice is based in street dance, mainly whacking, which isn't a street dance style, created in LA in the underground gay clubs with the queer community in the 70s. So that's what I practice in. But before that, it was just dance crews and then a bit of street styles and getting engrossed in the culture and the foundations of what hip-hop and the other street dance styles like whacking and Vogue and Crump all have. So, yeah.
That's cool. Mm. That's quite a journey then into choreographing Pacific dance.
It is. It's,
do you integrate it in any way?
Absolutely. The language I speak with my body, the street dance, and whacking, specifically whacking. But so this opportunity to be a part of this festival really made me kind of sit back and say, like, what part of me do I want to express for this opportunity, for this show? Because in other realms, if I'm battling or if I'm showcasing or if I'm doing a dance someone's hired me to do, it has to kind of fit a mold. And for this, I really got to explore what I like. So what draws me to whacking is this theatrical moments, and then that draws me deeper into fantasy, and then I can loop that back into who I am as a Māori woman and look deeper into our mythology and how I can integrate all of that, bringing that old again, like Lumina said, into the new and into who I am. So without this opportunity, I probably wouldn't have thought as much that or brought it into my practice as much as I have now.
And the thing is, with so much of the street dance coming out of Aotearoa, mm-hmm. it is hugely influenced by our Pacific cultures and Māori, and, you know, and absolutely. I think that's why we always do so well mm-hmm. In international competitions, because our dance is just got that different heart to it when you see our kids dancing. And of course, Bring It On was a huge part of what I used to do when I was because I was teaching dance at Aorere College.
So amazing.
It was something, you know, I was part of for 5 years.
Cool.
And it's definitely a very cool vibe when you see them all coming together, and, you know, I think it's great. And I think that's really cool thing that's come out of TikTok as well. Mm. I hate to say it. You know, I know some of us aren't TikTokers, but you watch them doing their little dance moves and everything, and yeah, the heart is there very much.
Definitely.
I'll have you know, I did do one TikTok video. One.
Yeah, that will do.
Yeah.
Your daughter would say that will do as well. Thanks. Stay away from the TikTok, Stephen.
Lumina, when did it all start for you dance-wise?
So growing up in the Cook Islands, it was like a thing for us to do. We had to do it, and I come from a background from a family of culture and dance and performing arts, but it was just Cook Island dance. I remember when I was back then, we called it grade 6, so I think I was 7 years old then. I remember walking past the staff room of the teachers, and I saw them play a video on a tape recorder, and it was of a lady dancing, and she was doing contemporary. Oh my goodness, I fell in love with that style. And since then, I was always inspired to move in a different way, because for me, Cook Island dancing is quite codified. There's a code to it. It's always the same. And I'm that type of dancer who likes to explore because of what I saw. And so growing up, I would always come up with really strange kind of movements. And I was always looked at like, what kind of movement are you doing? Because it's not the norm. Then when I came to New Zealand in 2011, Pacific Dance had a choreographic lab, and they were looking for dancers. And I was like, oh, this is my opportunity to go and try something different. And I did. I dove right in, no contemporary dance training, only Cook Island dance training. And I was like, what did I get myself into? There was so much really weird explorations. It's like, imagine, I remember one direction that was given to us, and she said, imagine that you are tasting snowflake on your tongue, and imagine that it's ash and it's burning your tongue. And I was like, how do you do that? I was looking around at all the other dancers, and they were doing, it was really cool movement, and I was like, how do I do that? So from there, I just went with it. And it was just every time, it was always raw. It's like, okay, I'm just going to go literal here. Mm-hmm. And then from then, it gave me, what's the word? It gave me the courage. I realized I needed courage. I always needed courage to go into these depths of movements that I've never thought I'd ever do. And it was so amazing, because then it enabled me as a dancer to like connect to my body even more. It's like, oh, that's right. I didn't realize I could move my body like this. Oh, my body's moving that way. Mm-hmm. And so from there, it grew. Like, it just kept growing and growing and growing. And then I thought, how do I move this and bring that into Cook Island? How do I introduce this kind of movement and move this into like something traditional, something new for Cook Island movement? And instead of what we see normally, I just want to switch and give it a different perspective in terms of dance. And that's
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, we can head to pacificdance.co.nz for all the information on the festival running from the 1st to the 16th of June. I'm going to let these two fabulous people give one more plug for their own work so people can track it down, come and see it. Hayley?
Awesome. So my work is called EOS. It is performed by me and my dance company, Prowl Productions, and that'll be at the Moana Showcase on the 6th of June.
Nice. Yay, kia ora everyone, and my piece is called Te Arekariui Nui, and translated into English, it is the Grand House of Entertainment. And when we say house, we speak of the body. When we say the grandness, it's the grandness of the body. When we say entertainment, it's entertainment in terms of liberating the body.
Nice. Now, if people want to track you on social media, how can they find you, Hayley?
You can find me at Hayley Walters TK on Instagram and my dance company at Prowl Productions.
And for me, you can find me on Instagram, Tumu Iyo Ura and Dance, and on Facebook, it's my name, Lomina Aretia.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming into Kick Arts on a Sunday night, and all the best for a wonderful festival.
Thank you.
Great having you here. Thank you. Now, I see Alone at Edinburgh Fringe Festival. It's gone up 1%. They're now 96% with 20 hours to go. That's only about $700 that they need to raise. So jump on to booster.org.nz. Now, we're playing Tina Turner tonight, and it's Hamish's request next. It is Proud Mary.
You know, every now and then, I think you might like to hear something from us. Nice and easy. But there's just one thing.
Down in the city.
You see, we never, ever do nothing.
For the man
nice.
Every night and
easy.
Day.
We always
but
do
I
it.
Never lost
nice.
1 minute
and
sleep.
Rough.
And now
we're going to take the beginning of this song
the thing
and do it
been.
Easy.
Big wheel keep
but then we're
going to
do the finish.
Turning.
Rough.
Proud Mary.
It's the way we
keep
do.
On burning.
Proud Mary. And we're rolling. Ooh, rolling. Ooh, rolling on the river.
Listen to the story.
Left a good job. Working for the man every night and day. And I never lost 1 minute of sleep.
And I was worried
about the way that things might have been.
You know that
big wheel keep on turning. Proud Mary, keep on burning.
Perry, Rolling on a River. If you've got a Tina Turner request for the night, pop it up on our post on our Facebook page.
No, Instagram.
Oh, Instagram page.
It might be on Facebook as
it
well.
Is, it is. Yeah, that's where I
put it on the story as well on Instagram. There you go.
Brilliant, brilliant.
So, coming up now, we are talking to the amazing team from the Kai Mau Festival in Ponaki, and to start off with, we're catching up with writer and director of Moku Moku, Shirley Kahau. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Sorry, that's Shirley Kahui.
Sorry, Kahui. My apologies. So tell us a little bit, to start off with, what is Moku Moku?
Moku Moku is a theatre show. It's a black comedy about identity and the intersection of sexual violence and colonization.
And whereabouts did this come from? Like, what inspired you to write a piece on that?
It's basically that's my lived experience. Sorry, my child is mentally asleep.
It's quite okay.
But it started off as a solo show about kind of existential dread and identity. And then when I reworked it as part of the Breaking Ground Festival in 2021, I focused less on that kind of, I guess, what am I doing with my life that you start thinking about when you're in your maybe late 20s, early 30s, and started looking at the work that I was doing on myself, which of course led me to be talking about trauma and healing from trauma.
Right. Well, as you've just said, it sounds like there's a been a bit of a journey. If it was, you know, workshop was a solo in 21 and now it's to here. What dreams or aspirations do you have for it following this festival?
Well, following the season at Kiammo, we are taking the show up to Taranaki, which is where I woke up to. So that'll be awesome as part of their Reimagine Festival. And then who knows? I think it seems to really resonate with people, and I'm interested to see what happens when it's out of its context as well, because it's very specific to Aotearoa, but really the themes of colonization and violence against women are pretty global.
Definitely.
Now, you're a graduate of Victoria University and Toi Whakaari. You've made theatre here in Japan, Australia. What's been a personal highlight for you in this journey in the arts?
Working in Japan was awesome. That was when I first started doing kind of more community-based theatre, working with the kind of English language-speaking community over there. But also, something that cracked me up when I was there, my Japanese was terrible, but I was having to work with producers and, you know, crew that only spoke Japanese and no English. But because we understood the processes and we knew the work that needed to be done, it was actually really easy to communicate, even though we weren't speaking the language, which is hilarious. That also gave me the opportunity to see some amazing practitioners that I'd studied when I was at university, which was really cool to then be able to see that work in real life. And then I guess being able to work and tour around Australia was awesome as well, especially being able to go to the Adelaide Fringe because it's, you know, it's the biggest festival in the Southern Hemisphere. So that was a great experience too.
Absolutely.
And obviously going to lots of festivals and things are quite hard for an independent. Have we had funding support?
Sometimes for different projects, but a lot of it is funded through crowdfunding. It is quite difficult. That's why having touring a solo show is a lot easier, obviously, because you've got this to deal with. But it is quite hard as an independent practitioner.
Brilliant. Well, where do people head to find out more about your show and the festival?
To the Kalmo website or to Circa Theatre's website. You can book tickets through either of those channels.
Brilliant. It's playing 6th to the 10th of June at Circa 2?
Yep.
Fantastic. Well, we wish you every success. We'll let you get back to the little giggly one in the background and let you put them to bed, and we wish you all the best for your performances ahead.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So, just one event, Emma, in the festival.
Yeah, definitely. And so if you jump onto our events page on our website, which of course is kickarts.org.nz, better get that right, you can see on our events page there is the festival link, and they've got things happening between the 2nd and the 17th of June. So there are so many things on offer as part of the festival. In fact, we're just getting on the phone now Helena Jane, who is one of the producers of the festival. So hopefully we can hook into her. Are you there, Helena?
Yeah.
Fabulous. Welcome to Kick Arts.
Thank you.
So we've just heard a little bit about Muku Muku from Shira Lee. So tell us a little bit more about the festival as a whole. It's a biannual festival, I believe.
The biennial festival, ooh, so every 3 years.
Yep.
And it is, it's a coming together of Māori, Indigenous and Pacifica, primarily dance and theatre, and some music works from all around the globe.
Cool. So how do you get into it? Who decides what's in and what's out, or puts it together?
These are pretty high-level programming questions. I'm not entirely sure, but I mean, Honam Media, whose baby it is, they are very well tapped into the Indigenous creative community all around the globe, and they work really hard to maintain amazing connections with our creative whānau around the place. Probably being known to them and their crews, we've all worked together before in many other kind of iterations, and I think probably the most important thing is having a story to tell.
Fantastic. So what was the journey to get Muku Muku into the festival?
So we have had Muku Muku in development for the last 2 years or so. Shira Lee was part of Breaking Ground Festival, which is also part of the Kia Mau portfolio. That's an Indigenous playwriting development festival. After that, we took it to Bat Theatre, where we were lucky enough to have a co-production with them. Opened it in the development season last year, and then off the back of that we received the invitation to be part of this year's Kalmo Festival.
Awesome. And tell us a little bit about your own arts journey and background that's led up to this event.
Oh, that's a big question.
Yeah, well, that's what our show is all about. We love hearing people's journeys.
Oh, I love it. Okay, so I started in AmDram about, feels like 100 years ago, but like the early 2000s. I was lucky enough to sort of stumble into the world of theatre and producing, mainly because my dad was doing a show at the time. I met some incredible writers back then. They asked me to produce their works. I didn't really know what that meant, and probably still don't, to be perfectly honest. We very much learn as we go in this biz. I've worked in kind of other industries as well, but my skill set really is around that kind of back end, facilitating people to best tell their creative journeys. So came back to Aotearoa in 2014 and have been pretty busy ever since, which, I feel very grateful for. My focus is primarily in the development of new works from Aotearoa, and where I can, it is with Māori and Pacifica writers. It's what I'm passionate about. It's what I care about. I'm kaitahu, so I like to tell our kaitahu stories, but also love to kind of share the voices of all our, particularly wahine Māori. So, yeah, that's the nutshell version.
What do you think in a, you know, if you were describing our performance culture here to someone overseas, what do you think it is that makes it special or makes it what it is or unique?
It's the people. It's the connections. It's our unique voice. I mean, Aotearoa is really special. And that's sort of who we are as people in our journeys. And I think, it's incredible. And it is different to anywhere else.
So
I'm sure everyone would say that about their countries, but, you know.
Yeah. So tell us, what do you hope if you were to put that secret camera, maybe the dash cam in the bathrooms or something at the end of the show, what do you hope people leaving the show are saying about it?
I hope there's no cameras in the study pucker.
Not the best, you know.
I mean, we want Wahine Māori in particular to feel seen and feel heard. And, you know, that there's this old adage, right, that if you don't see your stories, you don't feel like you can share them as easily. So, yeah, I think feeling open, feeling generous, and for everyone, really, to go away feeling like that they've got something to offer. Learning how to listen better is probably really important, especially for our non-Wahine Māori. Learning how to support each other. Yeah, a lot.
Fantastic.
There's heaps in it for everyone.
Brilliant. Where can people head to find out more about the performances and the festival?
I think your best port of call is the Kiamo website, which I believe is kiamofestival.org or kiamo.org. I'm really sorry.
That's right. No, it is kiamofestival.org.
And the festival runs from the 2nd to the 17th of June. It's got an amazing program of works, like I said, all around Aotearoa, but also some of our international whānau back this year as well, which is very exciting after obviously a bit of a hiatus in international travel. Yeah, so I think that's your best bet. And you'll find Moko Moko on there, as well as a whole raft of other incredible shows from our creative whānau.
Yeah, it looks like an amazing lineup. Well, all the best for the festival, and thanks so much for chatting with us tonight on Kick Arts.
Thank you very much.
Ka kite. Bye-bye.
Ka kite.
Isn't it great, Emma, tonight, like, number of festivals, that real sense of how sort of busy these things are again. You know, after years of it being so quiet, now there's almost so much happening out there.
Definitely. And to have a festival where people have days, you know, days and days to see lots.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to fill our studio with our next lot of guests. And while we do, of course, it's Tina Turner night. And here is What's Love Got to Do with It.
You must understand, the touch of your hand makes my pulse react. That it's only the thrill of boy meeting girl, opposites attract. It's physical, only logical. You must try to ignore that it means more than that. Oh, what's love got to do? Got to do with it? To me, if I tend to look dazed, I read it someplace, I've got cause to be. There's a name for it, there's a phrase that fits, but whatever the reason, you do it for me.
I'm so tempted, Emma, to make all our guests just sort of sing along. We could do like Tina Turner karaoke. It might end the show, but you know.
Can I just say that Meg's in the studio now?
Yeah.
Let's not have her sing.
Oh, that's rough.
Hey, if it's a great Shakespearean shanty, you're pretty good at those.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, absolutely. Welcome to the show. We have got the fabulous Mark and Meg from Chocolate and Carnage. That sounds dangerous, very dangerous. And James and Karen from the wonderful Titirangi Theatre to talk about their latest show. Welcome to the studio, team.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Now, some of you have had things on today and others haven't. So let's start with Chocolate and Carnage. What's happening in your world and what is Chocolate and Carnage?
Oh, what is Chocolate and Carnage? Chocolate and Carnage is a theatre company that myself, Mark Wilson, and my partner, Meg Andrews, started. Chocolate was a description of my skin tone. I have beautiful brown skin, and when my partner went to put in caramel, it auto-corrected to Carnage.
Ah.
And it was very appropriate. So we are Chocolate and Carnage.
Fantastic.
I want to know, though, because your bunny's not included in that, so these guys have the most adorable, fluffy bunny.
Couscous. Follow her on Instagram. She actually is with the CC because she's Couscous, and so that's part of the reason that we wanted Chocolate and Carnage too, to have the two C's.
So it's Chocolate and Carnage and Couscous.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now tell us, what have you got coming up?
What haven't they got coming up?
Exactly.
So we have a show called .co.nz that Mark wrote. It was written for Matariki last year for the first time that
That's
it was
right.
recognised.
I remember us talking about that. Yeah.
So we have, we're doing that again for Matariki this year. I'll let Mark talk about the actual idea.
Yeah,
and
let's unpack it. What's it about?
So .co.nz, it came from my shame about not knowing enough about my culture. When Matariki got announced as a public holiday, I had no idea what Matariki was, except that it was Māori New Year or something along those lines.
Something to do with some stars.
Is it where you get drunk and make promises that you're not going to make? Is that what it is? And then when I investigated further, I realized that Matariki as a holiday is way deeper than that. And so I wrote a play to explore my journey of learning about Matariki as well as some friends, and kind of wrapped it up in a story about three friends trying to discover their culture when they had grown up kind of distance from it.
And what was the sort of feedback and reaction last year, and have you tweaked it at all for this year? Is this version 2.0?
So it is very much 2.0. It follows a similar storyline. It's still the same play. We've had to update things because there was a lot about it being the first, recognised as the first public holiday.
Right.
So we've updated those bits. But we also have the addition of a new actor who is bringing some really fresh ideas, and already it has some new life and new energy in the rehearsal room. So a lot of people did see it last year, and I think if they come again, it's going to be just as cool an experience, but different as well.
Nice.
And it's a pretty cool experience anyway, because, of course, you do it under the stars, don't you?
We do. We do it outside in the Pump House Amphitheatre in the middle of winter, so it is a real novelty to come out and wrap up warm. We did it even in the rain last year, so a light sprinkling of rain, we still go ahead. And the feedback we had was people actually really enjoyed that. It added to the ambience of the show and made it quite a magical experience. But if you do come, be prepared, bring warm clothes. Yeah,
especially at the moment. Prepare for cyclones, tornadoes, anything else that we can throw at you. Yeah. I love it.
But it's a good excuse to snuggle with your whānau.
Yes.
Bring your whānau along and, snuggle with them while you find out about culture.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. And Emma said, one of many things that you've got coming up. So when you're not doing this show or in Bunny Instagrams, what else is happening in your world?
Oh, what have I got on? I mean, I work at the Pump House. I work in a theatre, so we always have something coming up. We have creative talks coming up. soon with
what are they? What are Creative Talks, guys?
Creative Talks we get creatives into the Pump House Theatre to talk about their craft and their experience in the theatre space.
Anyone we know?
Emma Bishop. Emma?
Oh, that'll be a sellout.
Yeah,
that I think will it will be. Hey, that's coming up in June. I just noticed in my diary. So, if anyone wants to come and hear more of me talking,
have you written it yet, Emma?
I don't know if I have to write something. I just thought I was coming for a bit of a sharing and a chit chat.
Yeah,
it's not a keynote, Stephen.
And earlier tonight, we chatted with Mikey Videotape of course, your Tunes in June taking place. So lots happening always at the Pump House as well.
Yeah. There's a lot of musical events in June, and of course, Timbrae Theatre Company will be back with the Magic Faraway Tree. Lots going on. Mm. Yeah.
And you just closed, of course, our friends Mass Productions.
Yes, yeah.
Last night?
Yeah, they're all packing out of the theatre today. So, yeah, we're very busy. I think we're fully booked for the rest of the year. I think we've just got an opening in August. So if anyone wants to book the venue, give us a call.
And you've been doing lots of marketing lately to promote your venue as a space for hire next year as well. So, yeah, good on you. Good on you, guys. And you're always supporting Kick Arts. So we really appreciate that. Thank you. We're going to come back and unpack a little bit more about you as people in a sec. But first of all, let's whiz from the North Shore to West Auckland now and have a little chat with James and Kieran from Titirangi Theatre here to chat about the Laramie Project. Welcome, Kieran. Welcome back to Kick Arts. Welcome to our new home.
I know. I love your new home. It's a bit flash.
Yeah, no rats in this roof yet.
I didn't see any rats in the other place. I'm very glad I didn't know about the rats.
So are you directing?
We never saw them, Kieran. We heard them.
Yeah, we just only heard them.
It might have just been Stephen scratching around in the ceiling.
Now you're directing this project?
I am.
Yep. And James, what's your role in this one?
I've actually got three roles.
Show off.
Yeah, I know. Look at me go.
Overachiever.
And what's that?
So I'm playing Jedediah Schultz, which is a young university student who's kind of coming to terms with himself and finding out how his world's going to be. I'm also Aaron Kreifels, who is another university student, and I'm also one of the murderers.
Brilliant, multitasking there.
I love the way you said murderous.
Yeah, just a bit of difference with the character.
Dramatic. Stunning.
So, Kieran, for anyone out there that's listening that doesn't know the Laramie Project, tell us about it. What's the storyline?
So, it is a real story about a young gay man in Laramie, which is a place in Wyoming, who in 1998 was brutally beaten and eventually died of his injuries. And it became very well known as a hate crime. The perpetrators or murderers, as James so beautifully described, but they were also local boys of the same age. So this is that's the basic story, but really it's a theatre company from New York that went to Laramie and interviewed all the townsfolk about this experience and what it meant to them, how it affected them. So it's really, although it's about this beating of a young man, it's also about how that has affected the community and their reactions to it and how they deal with it ultimately.
Okay. A bit different to some of the comedies you've brought us that you've been directing over the last few years.
Oh, I'm glad you noticed that. Yeah.
What's that shift like for you as a director?
In terms of kind of emotionally, I mean, I really, really like drama. And as an actor, I love it all. But it has been a big shift. I think for me as a director, the biggest shift is we've got a big cast. We have a small stage at Titirangi. You can do this play with eight actors. There's something like 77 different roles. Some of them only have one line, but there's 77 different roles. And you can do this with a cast of eight. I've gone with 16. Part of the reason for that is because I was so impressed with the quality of people that turned up to audition. And especially some of the younger people.
Yeah.
And I really, really felt that we needed to get more younger people involved in our theatre. And it's been wonderful. We've got such a mix of ages, and that's been really special for us, and it's good to have the young'uns like James involved. Although you're kind of in between, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm kind of getting up there in years, unfortunately.
So, James, what's it like being in a story that's, you know, based on true events, and, you know, does that change your role as an actor a little bit, or your thinking behind it?
Yeah, it does. It really does. And I'd say that it's a story that's quite close to my heart. It's a story that I first heard about in high school, and one of my friends that was at a different high school was doing it as their production. And ever since then, it's been a show that I've wanted to be involved with. And the thing with having three different characters is being able to play them in different ways and show those differences to the audience, because it's a unique show. We're all on the stage for pretty much the whole production, so we have to do costume changes and prop changes on stage as we're going, and think about what's coming up next and anticipate it. Yeah, it can be a big challenge.
And, of course, do you think it helps that it is a verbatim play? So the words you're saying are actually the real words from the interviews. So do you think that helps when you're creating a character? Because,
It does help. It doesn't help in terms of trying to remember your lines because they are verbatim. So some of the sentence structures and some of the way that the characters say it is quite different to how we would speak now.
Hmm. It's for me, the verbatim, there's a responsibility. This is how I feel, and I think the cast feel it too, that it is a very different responsibility. You know that you are saying the words and you are representing exactly what real people have said. It's not just a theatre company that has done these interviews with these people and then gone away and changed those words. It is verbatim. It is what they said. It's just that what the theatre company did that created this or devised this piece, it is how they structured that.
Mm.
But it is the words of people who lived through this experience, and with that comes responsibility to represent that in a truthful and respectful way.
Have you ever done verbatim, Meg?
I guess the Vagina Monologues was. I directed that back in 2020, I think. Yeah, but I didn't have to perform in that, so I don't know what it was like for the actors. But, yeah, directing that kind of theatre is quite challenging, but really exciting as well.
Yeah, it is really exciting. Yeah. It's different. It just gives you a whole different vibe.
Yeah, people's real stories. Yeah. I think it doesn't get better than that to reach audiences. Yeah.
And it's a very different, it becomes a very different structure from, say, a playwright who's sat down and written something that is their idea and their vision, and creating characters that aren't real to actually representing real people is very different.
Mm. Now, Emma and I were talking earlier about the abundance of theatre and events and festivals at the moment. How is both Pump House and Tauranga Theatre finding their sort of audiences and tickets and things? Are we spread too thin at the moment because we've got the likes of Hamilton and people are saving the big bucks to go there, or are you finding you're playing to good houses and good future bookings? How's it looking over on the shore?
It comes and goes, honestly. I think now more than ever, the importance of promotion and good marketing is vital to get it out there, that what your show is, what's it about, and why should people see it. I think that's more important than ever than just maybe the things we relied on pre-COVID, like people are just going to come. It is harder now, but we do get quite good audiences at the Pump House for a lot of things that we're doing. So it's really hopeful. It's looking up.
It's always that balance of locals, and I guess you find the same out west. The local audience that come and support, but then trying to capture people who go, oh, that's something a little bit different.
Yeah. And I think also, I know at the Pump House we really want to focus on bringing in new audiences and diverse audiences and trying to find out who isn't coming to the theatre and how can we draw them in. And things like the Laramie Project is perfect because that is going to bring probably a younger queer audience.
On the stage and off, it's worked,
And we found with .co.nz last year, we were bringing in different audiences and people who didn't really go to the theatre before because our show is free to attend. So it allowed that accessibility to everyone in the community to come and see something, and we fed them afterwards too.
Now, you've just said that it's free to attend your show, so that must mean there's got to be some kind of funding happening. And I do believe that there's a bit of a boosted campaign happening at the moment for you.
Yes, we do have a boosted campaign. We've got 1 week left, and I think we're at 66% of our $6,500 target. So we're going pretty well.
That's pretty good. So we've been, tonight we'd pushed that alone, of course, finishes in 20 hours. They were on last week and they were on how much when they were here?
They were only on 14% last week and we are now at the grand total of, I'm just doing a quick refresh, 97. Thank you, listeners. You have been amazing. That's gone up 4% in the last hour.
If they in a week after being on Kick Arts have gone up that much, and we're currently sitting on 66% for you guys with 7 to go. So that means you close this time next week. I reckon we're easily going to hit the target if our listeners get their A&G and get gifting.
Let's get that up on socials.
Yeah, it's been up. I will repost it.
I'm proud to say that Te Tārangi Theatre contributed to the Alone campaign.
Oh, thank you, Te Tārangi Theatre. That's
well,
awesome.
Well, there's another campaign. Yeah.
I'm listening.
$5 will do. $5, $10, anything will boost them up. So that's .co.nz on Boosted.
And just to reinstate, like, it does ensure that people in the community can see this for free, which I think is so important to get new people into theatre as well.
Mm. Well, considering it's about culture, and, you know, given as well that there's the new education priority for Mataranga Māori in all schools at all levels, I mean, a play such as yours would be a perfect example for maybe any teachers out there might like to come along and have a little bit of a look from the outside and get a bit of a look through the lens.
Absolutely. We had quite a few teachers come last year to .co.nz and we got swamped with requests to tour it to schools.
Brilliant.
We don't know if that's on the cards at the moment, but it's something we definitely want to look into because we do think it'll benefit younger people at school.
Maybe a school trip, maybe any kaiako out there that want to get the ākonga along, they could bring a little school trip down to the old Pump House.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. And Karen, out west, audiences still rocking on in?
I'm feeling that now we're really now kind of heading back into our straps from COVID. It has taken us a long time. Our audience membership not just our membership, but we are an older audience generally. We're a community theatre. It's Te Tārangi. It's a lovely little, you know, village. So we have that and it took our audience a long time to come back because of the age of our audience and our volunteers. So then we finished last year with Winding Up. That was still taking some time for audience to come back. We hit this year with Father Ted, which sold out we were basically sold out before we opened. There were very few tickets to get, and we could have run for another week easy and sold out. So that was brilliant for us. I mean, it's a perfect show.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see how Laramie sales go because this is quite a different sort of show for Te Tārangi Theatre audience. But the indication so far is there's a lot of interest.
That's so cool. Yeah, very cool.
It's looking good.
All right, so I'm going to go around the table now, and part of Kick Arts, we always love to know your arts journey. James, I'm going to start with you. When did the arts come alive for you?
It came alive for me when I was about 6 years old, and I became involved with the Alex Urban stuff that was at that time at AOTA Centre. And I did that for a couple of years, and you paid to be in the show, yada yada. And then I got involved in Glen Eden Playhouse with community theatre there, and did that until I started teaching. And then life kind of got away with me, and I put a bit of a pause on it for a little while, and I put my big boy pants on and decided to do a play last year at Playhouse, which was MASH. And then I actually saw Kieran in Father Ted at Titirangi, and somebody said to me, oh, she's the director for the next one, the Laramie Project, and I was just so taken by her and the theatre and everything.
I didn't know this. I haven't paid
it. This is a revelation. yeah, and I thought, oh, what the heck, I'll give it a go.
Awesome. So, yeah. Awesome. And is it everything cracked up that you wanted it to be? But I know it's tough saying that, the director staring right next to you.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You might only have two parts tomorrow. Yeah, yeah. You realise that, don't you?
No, I need him.
It really has been awesome. I've learned so much from Kieran and the rest of the cast. As Kieran was saying, the cast have varying levels of experience and ages and things, so it's been such an awesome learning experience.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
All right, Mark, take us back. When did the arts hit your world?
So the arts hit my world, I was 14, I think, when I actually started getting into theatre, because my mother forced me to take it at high school. Made a really big scene at school, because I'm such a drama queen, you've got to take drama. That was the beginning of my journey. And then, yeah, ever since then, I've been doing a lot of community theatre around the shore. I started off at Theatre Works and Phoenix Theatre. Made my way to Shoreside to take part of the Summer Shakespeares. Been doing that for 12 years. I think that's showing my age a bit. and then, yeah, just started our own company, writing our own stuff.
Old fogey.
Do you prefer sort of the writing, the producing, or being on stage?
After doing it for such a long time, writing was such a refreshing process, daunting as well. I think being in control of a narrative and seeing it come to life is a uniquely rewarding experience that you don't know how it feels until you try it. I would strongly suggest that people try to write their own material, get out there, devise, create, because there's no high like it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Meg, same for you. On stage, off stage, where do you prefer?
On stage, for sure.
give me that audience.
Yeah, I like the limelight. my journey started when I was 6 months old. Ooh. I played Baby Jesus, highlight of my career. And then my parents put me into dance classes when I was 3, and I did different styles of dance right through till I was a teenager. Got really hooked on Shakespeare at school. I had a really good teacher, which is rare for Shakespeare. And then I went to a couple of drama schools in New Zealand, and have been in Auckland doing professional and non-professional, a mixture, for the past 10 or so years. And I just recently have gotten into the world of directing, so I really enjoy it, but it has to be something I'm passionate about, because I get very jealous of the actors and just want to be on stage. But this one's one that, you know, I absolutely adore directing it, and it's a very special experience. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. All right, Kieran, lucky last. Take us back.
Look, sort of strangely,
that makes it sound like it was a very long story, Stephen. I hope you realise that you just did that to Kieran.
What, the take us back?
Yeah, it was the way you said it. Like, we're going.
Yeah, I'm 84.
Yeah.
And I didn't take it that way.
Oh, good. But okay, now, I just pointed
but,
it out.
But now I feel slightly sad inside.
Take us back, Kieran. When did it all start for you?
Well, you know what? I will take you back because... Having thought about this stuff before, I always thought it was when I was a teenager and started drama classes, and I've thought about this stuff more. It goes further back than that to when I was a very young child and watching things like Morecambe and Wise and The Two Ronnies and things like that on television. And my brother, who's 6 years older than me, was very, very funny. He's the real performer. He should have been a stand-up. He was incredible. So him and I, and even then when like the young ones came along, we just used to, we kind of created our own sketch comedy stuff at home, even like MacPhail and Gadsby stuff. We were so inspired by them, and we would just muck around in the living room. So for, that was the start, but I didn't realise. And then, and I was an, you won't believe it, but I was an incredibly shy kid. But at intermediate, some drama stuff started happening, and teachers were saying to my mum, you got to get her into this stuff. And so I went along to drama classes, and within one term I'd found home.
Nice.
I just found home. Yeah, yeah, and yeah. I went from being this incredibly shy kid to ta-da. And that was it.
Brilliant. All right, team, you've got your promo minute now as we come to the end of Kick Arts for another week. It's a chance to promote your show and also where people can track down information about yourselves. You can multiply into all the things happening at the Pump House. Kieran, I'm going to get you and James to kick it off. Show dates, information, tickets, how can they find out more?
So... I'll take over. James was a bit scared about this question.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, I'll take over. So we open on the 6th of June and we run till the 17th. On the 8th, no, the 7th. Thank you, James.
You're welcome.
On the 7th of June, which is a Wednesday, we're actually doing a fundraiser for Rainbow Youth.
Nice.
So there's no comps, no discounts, $30 tickets and 100% of the ticket prices go to Rainbow Youth.
Awesome.
The only money that Titirangi Theatre are earning from that is bar take.
Cool.
So that's, we're really excited about that.
Nice. And where can people head to find the tickets?
So to our website, www.titirangitheatre.co.nz, and you book through that website.
Awesome.
I think that's...
Can you still get tickets at the Titirangi Pharmacy?
No.
No, those days are gone.
No, no, those days are gone. So, but...
We won't take me back to the end.
Good to clarify that.
Brilliant.
That's no longer available through.
Jump online. Well, Kieran and James, wish you every success for the season. We'll look forward
so
to coming
much.
And supporting you both.
Yeah, thank you for your support. You're always great, you guys.
No worries. And Mark and Meg, where can people find out more and when's everything on?
So you can get your free tickets at pumphouse.co.nz. The show is called .co.nz, so look for that one. There is an optional koha if you want to pay for your tickets, but we do encourage you to book in to secure your spot. Yeah, and it's on from the 11th till the 15th of July. The 14th is the Matariki public holiday, so if you are looking for something to do on your day off, then come along to that. 7:30 shows, dress warm, bring jackets, bring umbrellas, and be prepared for cold weather, and stay for some kai afterwards too.
Awesome. And Mark, Pump House, if people want to find out more about what's coming up there, where should they head?
Also to our website, pumphouse.co.nz. We've got a number of things coming up. We've got a couple schools coming in. We've got Tunes in June coming up.
An Unseasonable Fall of Snow by Gary Henderson is coming. And also After Us is an Agatha Christie, which always sells out. So
get in fast.
Awesome. All the best, team. Thanks for coming into Kick Arts. And a big thank you to Pump House for always supporting us as well. We do appreciate it. Well, Emma, we've come to the end of our Tina Turner week. You've got a busy week with Fame Junior on this week.
We sure have. Fame Junior opens at the Rose Centre on Thursday evening. 4 shows only. Get along and support the youth from Stage Antics Takapuna.
Fantastic. And, of course, if you've got something coming up, flick us an email, info@kickarts.org.nz. We'll get you up on our bulletin page, or if you're full of mischief like this lot, we'll grab you in and come into the studio.
Great. So I suppose we should end by saying sleep well, Tina, and make sure you go out there and
kick some arts. Have a good week, everyone.
Same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some.